Hey, what's up, everybody? Justin Ochoa back with another episode of the Gym Sessions Podcast. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for tuning in. This is Season 2, Episode 5. And today we have on special guest Natalie Achanwa. Natalie is a WNBA player, and she is on the Executive Leadership Board of the Players Association in the WNBA. So great basketball conversation, great WNBA conversation there. We also talk about her upbringing, talk about Canada basketball. We talk about her college career. She's a Hall of Famer at Notre Dame. We talk about draft night, her experience in the WNBA so far. And then we dive in on her newest challenge, which is motherhood and all the change and challenges that come along with just being a mom and an athlete at the same time, and all the unique perspectives and different viewpoints that she has both on life and basketball since becoming a mother. So it's a great conversation. I always love to chat with Nat, and I'm always learning from her. So I really think you guys are going to enjoy this podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Nat, what's up? Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, no problem. I'm really thrilled to be here and to see the evolution of you and now your podcast.
Yeah. I'm this is one that I've been looking forward to for a long time. So I really appreciate you doing this, and I'm looking forward to the conversation that we have.
Yes, hopefully very insightful. Maybe I'll drop a couple gems for you.
I already know you will. So first off, this is the first time I've seen you in person, quote unquote, in person since you became a mother. So congrats. I know we've talked about that a lot, but congrats on that. I'm super happy for you. How has parent life been for you so far?
Man, it has been a roller coaster. Like, thrills for sure, struggles on the low end for sure. But it has been the most rewarding thing I've ever done to know that I have made something so special like Maverick has been the greatest reward and challenge in the same breath.
Yeah, trust me, I feel you.
you already know.
And two boys at home is crazy. I would suggest if you have another one, just pray for a girl, because two boys is crazy.
Well, I'm back to training and trying to get back in shape to play and stuff. So we will be taking a pause on children until I retire, because this whole coming back from having a child, people say like, oh, you're snapping back. There is no snapping or backing happening. There's a lot of running, sleep, and a lot of shoving food in my mouth when I get a second.
No, for sure. Like, There's coming back from injury, and there's coming back from giving birth to a child.
Growing a human. And that is...
Growing a whole human is crazy.
I did the ACL rehab, and we're like, growing a human's like over here. And keeping him alive is like over here.
Yeah, no, for real. It's like, I do kind of want to touch on that real quick. Now that we're on it, I mean, what have been some of the things that have like really just challenged you in terms of... I know the mental aspect of, you know, just trying to survive on 2 hours of sleep and keep a small human alive. But from a physical aspect, like, what are some of the big challenges that you maybe weren't expecting, being that you've been through some pretty severe rehabs, and now this is definitely probably the biggest comeback that you will have had?
Yeah, I've been so fortunate, though, to have my team and Canada basketball has created me this return to play plan where – I have been taking it with stride. There's been no rush. There's been no hyper-focus on anything. It's literally just been listening to my body and taking it day by day. And I think when I think of rehab or when I think of an injury, you can like focus on one part. Like, okay, my right knee hurts. I just do extra reps on my left when I need to offload for my right. But coming back from having the baby, like, outside of the pelvic floor therapy and core aspect of it, it's kind of like your whole body rehab. So there's nothing to like offload. It's kind of like, can I do it today or can I not do it today? And I think that's been the biggest struggle, is where maybe like mentally or emotionally, I feel good one day and I'm like, oh, let's attack this. And then my body's like, whoa, reel it back. You have like 25% in your tank. So just kind of adjusting to that and really truthfully listening to your body has been the biggest piece in all of this. And but it feels great to be back in the gym. It feels great to be back on the court. That time away was like almost refreshing, like a new kind of instilling, like, love for the game and wanting to compete. And I think it was like last week, my first workout, where I really felt that I was totally locked in, like fully engaged on the court. Like I was doing some 2-on-2 like ball screen stuff. And I was like actually giving feedback to my teammate, like, hey, you need to make this read. Hey, you need to make this read. And like kind of that natural leadership, natural investment and focus, that level of focus in the game. I think that was the first time it just came to me without me having to like tell myself like, hey, you got to communicate, you got to jab step here, you got to do this. It just felt like it flowed. So it's definitely a process. It's been great to get back into it.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm definitely glad to see you back on the court, back in the gym, and kind of, you know, on that comeback tour, I guess. So you mentioned Canada basketball. I want to take it way back to your upbringing and, you know, how you got started hooping, who put the ball in your hand, and talk a little bit about your unique high school experience and kind of the setting that you were in and how that prepared you for your career.
I tell this story all the time because I really started playing basketball almost by accident. Like I had a growth spurt. I was like 5'7" in going into the sixth grade. And at that time, my soccer coach, because my dad's Nigerian, so the first thing was like there was a soccer ball in front of my feet since I could walk. And then my soccer coach at the time when I was going into the sixth grade was like, hey, you're super tall. Maybe you should try to play some basketball. So I just went and tried out. I know, right? I went and tried out for the team. I'm like, they're like, you can't teach height. Go play basketball. I was like, okay. So, and my brother played basketball at that point. So I was like, okay, I want to be like him. And my dad tells us all the time, because the first time I shot the ball, like went over the rim, over the backboard, missed everything. And then I just turned around and ran back on defense. And my dad's like, this girl has no shame. She's going to be good one day.
Yeah.
So, and then it just kind of like evolved from there. I've been truthfully a super competitive person all my life. My mom removed certain board games and video games from our house when we were kids, because like controllers were being broken, like things, people were getting in fights. Like the competitive nature has always been in me. So it was just kind of basketball fit that at that moment. And then a lot of time in the gym and work ethic kind of like evolved my love for the game. I wasn't someone that naturally just loved basketball. I just loved to compete. Mm-hmm. And that brought me to my kind of high school experience you were referencing. It was called NEDA, National Elite Development Academy. It was run by Canada Basketball. It's obsolete now because they actually have prep schools in Canada. So this was before we had any kind of elite high school training in Canada. As our sports world, team sports is a little bit behind than the U.S. And so Canada Basketball took together the best 12 girls and best 12 boys in high school, and they made this like training pod. So we lived with families in Hamilton, Ontario, which for me was only 45 minutes away from where I grew up and like where my parents lived, in Guelph. But that was like people were flying from like different provinces, like different states and stuff to live here. And we did class like in the morning from like 9 to 12, and then we'd go to a local college, McMaster University, and we would train in the afternoon. And so we didn't play like a regular high school schedule. We played Canadian colleges. We played JUCOs in the States when we'd go. We'd play international tournaments. I traveled and played in France, in Argentina. And so it was really just like almost a national team program that trained together all the time.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's way ahead of its time. Way ahead of its time. Now it's like you hear about the prep schools and all that type of stuff. But back then, it's like that was what, 24 students total, and maybe a couple extras that maybe weren't athletes or whatever. But like you're here to hoop.
It was literally, and that was like where I had to really centralize into playing basketball, because even to go to that, I had to stop playing other sports. So it was typically supposed to be for juniors and seniors in high school, but I joined it as a sophomore, and I had to like literally like sign off like on a contract that I wouldn't like play other sports and stuff like that because they were worried about injury. And I'm like in the 10th grade, like, okay, I'll play basketball. And so then that's like really where like I learned the game. I was learning from some of like our junior national team coaches and like Canada basketball system. And I mean, that was really like the difference in the game back then, back in my day. We learned the game 5-on-5. And it was really like that was where that kind of like niche of playing smart, intelligent basketball, like where I play now as a pro, that's really where it grew and where it was instilled.
So getting that opportunity as a sophomore and kind of already being ahead, you know, in a program that's for upperclassmen, mm-hmm. what I'm assuming your skill level was pretty elite at the time. And you were starting to talk to colleges or at least gauge interest. What was your recruitment process like those last 3 years at the academy?
Yeah, well, I was pretty late to the game in general, right? Like just kind of starting in the sixth grade. I mean, compared to some of my counterparts that like grew up in basketball here. Mm-hmm. So it really wasn't until I went there that I was like, oh, I could go to college and play in the NCAA and get a scholarship. So that wasn't really like something that was scheduled and planned. It was kind of like year by year it evolved. And it was like, okay, this is real life. Like I have to really decide if I want to play this sport. And so I opened it completely to like every school. I was talking to anyone that emailed me. I was like, hey coach, I had wide open. So I was really just like absorbing the whole experience of recruitment. And I didn't necessarily like have a school. Like neither of my parents went to school in the States. Like I didn't have like a legacy or to follow in a footsteps kind of school that I was looking at. And so I had it wide open, played like an AAU tournament or two. And at that point they didn't rank Canadians either. So it was just kind of like, hey, there's this girl. And then playing in some of those tournaments, playing in Argentina was how I actually playing with my U19 team was how I actually got recruited by Notre Dame. So it wasn't even me like diving into it. It was also like people were like, who's this random Canadian girl? And so Neil Ivey, who's the head coach now at Notre Dame, was there to watch Skylar Diggins play on the USA team and ended up calling Coach McGraw and was like, there's this girl on the Canadian team that we should
we got two of them coming.
Yeah. So that's how Notre Dame happened. But I kind of went from, like I said, wide open, and I was answering emails from Joe Blow in Mississippi to narrowing it down to like 15 to 10 to 4. And then like my final two ended up being between like Louisville and Notre Dame. That's where I kind of ended up. And that was like right after like Louisville had like won a championship. And so and Notre Dame was close to home. My parents came to like every game. So it was, I was like, I went to University of Kentucky for an unofficial visit and I was like, whoa, like, yeah. When I tell you like facilities, I was like, ooh, shiny this, shiny that. Like mm-hmm. I was bright eyed, bushy tailed through the whole recruiting process. It was so new to me. Cause like I said, Canada's athletics, especially team sports is nowhere close to the scale of here. So even some of our, like our college programs are underfunded and undervalued, like mm-hmm. in comparison to like high schools here. So I go to like some Indiana games and I'm like, whoa, these facilities are bigger than some of the ones we have in Canada at the collegiate level. So it was just crazy to go through that experience and to see how the game is treated like a business here in the States. So
yeah, especially it's getting bad. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
It's younger and younger and younger. You're getting like these rankings for like second graders, and I'm like, this kid isn't like even like basketball.
What? 5-year-old highlight reel. I'm like, yeah,
it's crazy. Wait till they find out about like video games. They're just gonna not want to play basketball. And I mean, I always go back. I have it saved on my phone. It's a screenshot of one of these like prep events or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's a kid. I mean, this kid is literally like 7 years old, I think. And it's like a write up on him. And it's like, he has great size. And I'm like, you don't know that. He's seven.
Matt got great size too. He's in the 90th percentile right now for weight. So come on, who's offering him a scholarship?
That's what I'm saying. It's like great size. That kid has no idea how tall he's going to be. You don't know how tall his parents are. Like to rank these kids is crazy. But let me not go on that rant. So Notre Dame, Hall of Fame member, Ring of Honor. What I don't know if which one they call it, but you're a big deal. At Notre Dame especially. Talk about your career there. Like, take me through those 4 years and just on and off the court experiences that you learned along the way.
You know, I was up there for a football game. I'm not going to say which football game, but I was up there for a football game there a couple of weeks ago. And there was a bunch of alum, like me and my best friend and my son's godmother, Dev. We were up there and we were kind of reminiscing about college. And everyone loves like the cliches of like, oh, it's a family. But Notre Dame is something truly special. My time there is ingrained in who I am. When we say family, when we say that together, like, no one's seen my son because I don't post him. I'm very private about him. But when I walked in that room with former teammates, coaches, like, I'm like, this is Maverick. He's your nephew. He's your cousin. He's your whatever he is. But this is family. And I felt so comfortable, like, to this day. Like, people think it's weird. They're like, why are you going to Notre Dame? Like, I'm almost that like old alum, like I graduated like 10 years ago, but like, it's truly like a piece of my heart. And that's to say, like, that has nothing to do with the basketball. That has nothing to do with the four Final Fours, like championship runs. That has nothing to do with the ACC titles, Big East. You know what I mean? That just literally has to do with like how the people made me feel. And to me, that was the best decision I made in my life. Especially in an era now where kids are in and out of schools and transferring and all those things. Like, I went to college at a time where like, decisions mattered and you made a choice on one that you were going to stick with. And that's also just how I was raised. But going to Notre Dame was one of the greatest things that I could have done. And then when you talk about the basketball, when you talk about the on-court accolades and being able to compete at the highest level and compete year after year for a championship, if I could do it again, I mean, of course, my senior year, we were having a hell of a year. And then tearing my ACL, like, that always feels like that. Oh, that could have been that championship. And that would have been the best hurrah, especially like being so close so many times. I felt like that was the only thing I ever left on the table during my time at Notre Dame, was just that final championship run and missing out with tearing my ACL. But it was an experience, one that I wouldn't change for anything, because it gave me some family, additional family, especially being from Canada. And you know, and it was fun. It was fun to fly on the private jets and play in the big arenas and in the big games and the rivalries and playing at the highest level at that point and hopefully paving the way, right? There's now another Canadian there, Cass Prosper. So I was the first Canadian to ever play on the team, and now we have another one. So I'm like, hopefully creating this little pipeline.
Right, but, that'd be nice.
Yeah, but it was a lot. And one of the greatest choices I made was to go to Notre Dame, and to know that my jersey hangs in the rafters, to know that like my name is in the history books is huge for me. Just knowing how much I sacrificed to get to this point, to get to that point, to have that. And also to know that Coach McGraw, and to know that at the time Jack Swarbrick was the AD, to know that Joe Bonensteiner, to know that all those people felt that my name deserved to be in those rafters is something that I don't even have words for, because I've never been the superstar. Like, if you look at my career, I've never been the all-star. I've never been like the highlight reel player. I'm not flashy about my game, but to know that they valued my career, they valued what I brought to the teams I played on, they valued what I brought to women's basketball at Notre Dame. They valued what I brought to the culture of the game, how I led, how I left everything on the floor. They valued that enough to hang my jersey in the rafters. And for me, that's something special in the work that I've put in, but also hopefully like motivation to the next generation or the next players that are going to put on those Notre Dame jerseys, to know that not everyone has to hit the game-winning shot, that every piece of the puzzle is valued. And that's who I've always been in my career. And hopefully something like that will inspire other people to, continue to play the game, to continue to bring value, to continue to, expand how they think.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because like you said, it's like, we are so conditioned to like, think the superstars or the leading scorer or the all-stars or even the champions are the ones that are the only ones that are allowed to get their jersey retired or their name honored or whatever. And I'm not by any means, you didn't have like a mediocre career. I mean, obviously you did your thing, but like you said, it was not the flashy. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like you were the, you know, just like the most known player in the country. So to have that happen is pretty dope. And I think, you know, even at a school like Notre Dame, just athletics at Notre Dame is kind of like one of those, I don't know how to describe it. It's like the mystique behind it. Like in football, they don't even play in a conference because they're just like that good or have that standard. And so how does it feel like some of the names up there are like legends in their sport? And obviously, like I said, you're no slouch, but how does it feel to be named along some of those legends where when people look up there and then obviously when Mav gets old enough to read, you can take them and be like, look at mom's name up there. Like, describe what that feels like. Because me, I'm never going to feel that. So I need to hear it from you.
Well, I mean, at first I was just thinking like, so in the basketball arena, like when they put it up, they kind of move them around now. But like Coach McGraw's up there, like Neil Ivey's up there, like Skylar Diggins, Kayla McBride. Like I played with some of the greatest players in Notre Dame history. And just, it's just a reminder also that like, don't take this as like over humbleness. Like I know I did some things. Like that it has not come easy. And I've worked for everything. And so I know my jersey deserves to be up there. But once again, for me, it's always bigger picture. And it's not just in athletics. It's not just sports. It's just like thinking in terms of like community and society, like as a whole, like just once again, like you can't build a puzzle with a missing piece. Like it doesn't matter. It could be a corner. Mm-hmm. It could be a middle. Like everything matters in the bigger scheme. Like one person matters. Like on a team, like not everyone can score. There's only one basketball. Not everyone can grab a rebound. There's only one basketball. And so it's like, how can you add value to the bigger picture by being the best of being who you are? And that's just who I am. It is just trying to lead, trying to communicate, trying to do the scrappy, dirty things doesn't get the glory. And once again, it's just a reminder there's value in that. But I was tearing up when like you started to like mention Mav, and like for him to be able to see that, to see my jersey. He went up there with me for the football game, and like in the new basketball facility, it's insane. Like it was not there when we were there. Like they took over the whole student center and made it just solely basketball, the men's side and the women's side, own practice. They have smoothie station, they got all the fancy bells and whistles. And we always like talk about like, well, like our generation was the ones that like built that. And so now it's on the players that are there to like continue that legacy. And if they ever need a reminder, like on how every person is valued, like hopefully they can look at my jersey and know that like, hey, everybody is necessary for success. Mm-hmm. And when Mav goes up there, hopefully he can be like, my mom was cool back in the day.
She was cool.
She's high.
you, that reminded me, you had a funny tweet the other day.
Uh-oh.
You said something
it's
like.
It's called X now. Come on, man. Keep up.
Oh, yeah. Times. My bad. You had an X. You had an X the other day. You said, when I was in college, if we put we put cream cheese cream on our cheese? Bagels. We couldn't get it for free because they said that was, you know, like paying meal. The students.
Yes. Remember at the NCAA tournament, after games, we used to have butter and cold bagels. And I'm like, okay, like what you want us to put just dry butter on this? Like, can I get some cream cheese or some peanut butter or something? And they're like, no, if you give dairy, it's considered a free meal. And that's a violation.
Bro, that's crazy.
They handed out trucks.
They're giving out whole F-150s out here now.
I'm like, where's the Benzos?
All right, so here's a question off of that. Like, I feel like, and this is just hypothetical, so we can have fun with it, but if you grew up in this NIL era, I feel like you would be killing it absolutely killing it. Like, if you could imagine yourself as a college student now, who are some deals, like some brand deals that I think that would like fit for you? And you can't say Adidas because we're going to talk about Adidas later. That's too easy.
Okay. I mean, but I'm even just thinking of like some of the partnerships that I do now. And like, once again, talking about like the team aspect of like of Notre Dame, like I played during like the Skylar Diggins era of basketball, like where we were like as a team, like it was different. Like we were starting that like beauty trend. Like we would be in the game before the games and we were like straightening our hair and putting on mascara. And like now we're nowhere close to the pretty girlies these days that be getting all
crazy
the
with
games.
The beauty now.
Listen, that's different. But like I felt like we were the beginning of that kind of era and of like being able to like play both that like Beauty and the Beast kind of mentality, like because we were some dogs when we played, but like we still took the pride and the opportunity for us to like get a little cleaned up before the games. And so I mean, now I'm thinking like, well, if I could have had the Glossier deal and the partnerships that I do now, at that point would have been different. I mean, I know you said I can't do the Adidas thing, but it's not cool anymore, but like I used to like do like the little high socks when I played originally at Notre Dame. Like they were Adidas too, because we were Adidas when I was at Notre Dame. So,
oh, that's dope. That would be perfect.
That's what I'm saying. Like things like that would have been cool. But I think I would have taken like the, like maybe some nutritional approach too. Like, you know, I also like kids, but I'd be doing like some basketball camps and like, I think staying in the sports realm, like of maybe being able to use my name and likeness to brand a camp would have been something, because we do like Notre Dame camps and we always like we're investing in the schools we play for, the teams we play for, but never like back into ourselves. Yeah. So I probably would have started like my Ace of Hoops Natalie Chanwa camp earlier and definitely been able to brand it that way. So that would have been cool.
So let's talk about that transition from college to the WNBA and just talk about your draft night experience, some of the emotions of hearing your name being called and just the process that you went through to get ready for the draft and all that goes into that.
Yeah, so I had torn my ACL in the Elite Eight game against Baylor with a couple of minutes left. So right before then is where like conversations about like attending drafts like were kind of happening a little bit, but of course it's always like focus on finishing out your season. So I had received an invitation to attend the draft and then I tore my ACL, and I remember kind of just of course like going through the emotions of not being able to play in the championship game, and then after following through after that, like the emotion of, well, am I still gonna get drafted? Like, do I still have a basketball career? Like the physical and focus on the knee alone was a lot to deal with, where I actually had called up some WNBA staff because I was like, I don't know if I want to come to the draft. I don't know if I had like the emotional or mental capacity to not only have be crutching around with my knee messed up, but to be sitting in that room and not have my name called. And I didn't know if I could handle that. And I remember the conversation I had, and long story short, they basically told me, like, your entire career speaks for itself. Your 4 years at Notre Dame, it's not just about this moment now. What you bring to the court, what you bring to a locker room is way bigger than where you are in this moment. And so they really are the ones that encourage me to still go. Because they do a lot of other stuff, too, around the draft. It's not just, like, the room in the draft. Like, I remember we did some, we had some, like, financial talks. Like, we had some... we met with the Players Association at that point too. So there was a lot of other things that had to go around the draft. So it was really a great experience for me to go regardless. And then fortunately my name still did get called while I was sitting in the room. Yeah. So I didn't have to deal with that trauma. But I it was funny because we do a walkthrough before you do the draft, and they like go and show you like where to walk from your table, how to go up the stairs. We did a whole practice thing because I couldn't bend my knee, right? My knee was so swollen. I was on crutches. And so they're like, this is how you're going to walk. The guy's going to be here and help you up the stairs. Justin, when they call my name, I don't remember nothing that happened. I looked at my dad and I was like, all right, babe, threw the crutches under the table, wobbled over there. go to the stairs, and I'm like peg legging up the stairs because I can't bend my knee. And they're like, "That's not how we told you to go up the stairs." But I got up the stage and was just teary eyed, and I didn't know just how to act. But yeah, it was dreams coming true, right? It was to hear your name called, and especially my name and what it means to me. Just knowing that it is so much bigger than me being a basketball player. Like, just to know that I represent my family, to know that I represent, shoot, a whole country at that point. I represented so much more when my name was called than just me in that moment, that, like, it was just a whirlwind of emotions for sure. But it was truly an honor to get named to be a part of the greatest league in the world. And it was that moment. You couldn't tell me nothing. You couldn't tell mm-hmm. me nothing. It was something special. Now, when you get to training camp and all those things, it's a whole different story. But that moment right. was yeah. special.
Yeah. No, then in training camp, you're all ears. It's like, let's lock in.
And then
in.
It's like, can you make a roster too, right? Like,
yeah, that's the reality crazy of the thing.
WNBA. Yeah, and I sat out first summer because I was still rehabbing. I didn't play. Mm-hmm. I got drafted in 14, and I didn't play that year because – my ACL. And so I had surgery. I rehabbed. I actually was the director of operations at Notre Dame for that year, for that season.
Oh, that's
while
dope.
I rehabbed. Yeah. And then 2015, I came back, and that was my first, actually, that was my real rookie season was 2015. And
that's super dope. But I actually just saw that Ryan Howard is going to coach at Florida this offseason,
mm-hmm.
which
coach,
is dope. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's the way that the seasons line up. That's a super cool thing that WNBA players mm-hmm. can do if they choose not to go overseas or whatever, to get back to the college game, or just, I mean, obviously it's another way to make some good money too and stay around the game. So that's pretty
dope.
And
that's also like how the NCAA is evolving though. So, because once in a while you would see a couple WNBA players do it, but it's really hard in reality because normally during the summer is where schools recruit, and that's
right.
when we are in season. But with the NCAA expanding their coaching allowments now, like, you can have, I think it's like up to six, don't quote me on this, you can have more coaches. And so it definitely like opens a space for the WNBA players to be able to go and to give back to the game, like you said. And so a lot of schools are picking up on it, because you think like WNBA players, like, you're in your prime, like you're the best in terms of knowledge, in terms of mm-hmm. How you're currently playing the game. Like, no shots fired to my older folk, but I'm saying, like, right now the game is fresh in my mind. I'm literally playing. So to be able to transfer that to college while you're playing, I mean, it's almost silly that schools wouldn't take the opportunity to tap into the WNBA and to tap into that knowledge.
Right. And then just think about like the college players' experience. Like, they're getting to learn from, like, didn't she won Rookie of the Year her rookie season, right?
Yeah, she was an all-star this year. It's like her second
year. It's like you're getting to learn from one of the best in the mm-hmm. game, and mm-hmm. and she's only a couple years older than you mm-hmm. for some of the seniors. Like, you can really lock in and get some tricks of the trade, like, mm-hmm. from somebody who's in the position that you want to be in one day. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really cool. But you get drafted to Indiana Fever. Mm-hmm. What was this, 2014?
2014 I was drafted.
2014, so mm-hmm. this is 2 years after they won a championship, I believe. Yeah, 2012, I think they won the title. Yep. So you're coming in. What's the culture like? What's the Fever experience at that time? I know they're kind of going through a rebuild right now, but mm-hmm. talk about how it was in that era.
I mean, I was very, very fortunate to come into an organization that clearly just had won a championship a couple years before, but also had the Tamika Catchings effect. Mm-hmm. Having Catch as a vet in your first couple years, game changer. Not only just to be able to play with one of the greatest that played the game, but also to be able to like tap in, to learn how to be a pro. That's one of the biggest transitions is when you come from college, where you're like really babied in college. Like, everything right. is done for you. Like, you're like, here, this is when you go to class. This is when you eat. This is where you eat. This is right. everything is taken care of for you. Get on your little private jet, go to the game, come back, do your homework. Like, everything is tailored to you for you to succeed when you go to one of the top schools, a top program. And so coming into the league is a whole different level of independence. Like, first road trip, done shoot around. Okay, where's pregame meal? Drop you off at the hotel. Go figure out what you're about to do. Game's in 5 hours. Oh, like, sure, yeah. Like, what do you eat? What are we eating? Where are we going? When do you nap? So, like, mm-hmm. having someone like Catch there was huge in the little things, and like how to be a real pro and how to be a good pro. Because a lot of people just jump in and think it's like you're just getting paid to hoop. No, there's so much more that goes into it to staying great. I got to get used to saying it now because I got to do some quick math. 156, because it used to be the 144, yeah. only 144 jobs. And now with a little expansion, we're going to have 156. But there's limited jobs, limited opportunities. So you have to be the best of the best all the time. You have to continue to evolve. So like I said, coming into the league and having someone like Catch to learn from with the Indiana Fever was huge for my first couple of years, especially coming off an injury, because she had similar major injuries and was able to really help lead me in that moment.
Yeah, that's dope. So, yeah, you mentioned the expansion, which I think is amazing. I mentioned on the Ty Harris episode, like, that I don't know the ins and outs, the logistics, whatever, but it's something that has to happen by any means necessary because of just how many really talented players are not getting these opportunities just because it's simply just roster spots are not there. And I think Ty was even saying, you know, I think they only had 10 spots this year. So in some cases, it might not even be that 144 because you got some things tied up, whether then you got your vets, your all-stars, things like that. So people are fighting for a very limited amount of spots. I think this new team will be huge. I'd like to see like three more. If you can get up to four extra teams in that expansion, that'd be huge. What are your thoughts on like where do you think the line is in terms of keeping the league extremely talented to where there's no drop-off in any of these new teams and still – able to grow the league?
You know, it's such a, I go back and forth with myself all the time on this, on what's truly good for the game. And no one really knows, right? No one has a crystal ball and can tell you what it is. But it definitely brings excitement to the game to have an expansion team, to have mm-hmm. one going where clearly they have success with the Warriors already and Golden State bringing a WNBA team there. And even just from the interview, you can tell they have ownership that's invested in the game and that's excited to grow the game. So that's great. But at the same time, there's a lot of areas where we need to improve the league we have already. And you can take out the talent pool out of it because I think we have enough talent that's not on rosters to field 4 to 5 teams. So I don't mm-hmm. think that's the big question. It's like, how can we make sure that the league is going to be sustainable, how the league is going to be successful for years to come. And one, that's taking care of the players, and that's that player experience. And I mean, one of the biggest highlights always, because it's trendy to talk about in the media, is like the travel and our travel experience, and how that, by adding teams and West Coast teams and teams that I know the Raptors in Toronto was a huge one of topic too. But the reality is like, if we can't nail down travel to 12 teams, how are we going to add more right. games, add other destinations? I mean, you're talking international if you're talking Toronto. I think we have a lot of things that we need to fix and that we need to continue to take strides in how the league is currently run before we talk about huge expansion. But it's definitely exciting to get more jobs available to athletes. So. We'll never take that moment away. But I think there's a lot of things that we need to continue to improve on how we're operating as it is now.
Yeah. You mentioned it earlier at Notre Dame, you guys are flying private. Ty mentioned it on her episode at South Carolina, they were flying private, and then you make it to the pro level and it's like a downgrade in terms of travel logistics. Is that the, is that like the number one thing right now that, that from your perspective is kind of like that, that really heavily weights itself on how you can grow the game and how you can make the league even better?
I think it's like a piece of a bucket. For sure, travel is a big one. Salary is also another big one. And I think at the end of the day, it all comes back to taking care of your athletes. Like, your athletes are your product. So if you want them to compete at the highest level night in, night out, and add games. We had a 40-game year this season, which is like four more average than what we normally have. And so if you want to keep adding games, if you want to add new teams, taking care of your product should be a priority. Health and safety of your athletes should be a priority. And so scheduling back-to-backs, flying commercial, being jammed in seats, whether that's like not being able to afford maybe the highest level of off-season training. Like, there's a lot of things that go into being the best version of you. And I mean, I always like think about the way LeBron says, like, he spends $1 million on his body. Right. Like, you couldn't even imagine. We don't make anywhere to spend a fraction of that on our bodies. And so really that's encompassing on everything that the league needs to take care of, is really just how do you take care of your players? Because at the end of the day, like, you don't have a league without us. And I think that needs to be a priority, is the health, the safety, and taking care of your athletes. And we talked about, Ty mentioned, like, she only had 10 on her team at one point. And that's because of injuries. Like, you have a hard salary cap, so you don't have flexibility on keeping extra players. You're allowed 12. You have to have a minimum of 11. And so sometimes, even salary cap wise, maybe you're not even keeping the best player available because you need a cheaper rookie.
Right.
Because you have a hard salary cap. But once again, like, taking care of your players, maybe players got paid more, we wouldn't have to go overseas and could rest a little bit more in the off season. You get paid more, you're paying for the better treatment, rehab, whatever you need to take care of your body. So they all go hand in hand, right? You want the best product on the floor, you got to pay for it.
Yep. I like that. So I skipped over Mini real quick because we got in a good conversation about that. But I'm going to come back to what you mentioned with some overseas stuff and everything. But I just want to talk a little bit about just your first free agency experience. Mm-hmm. Had a great run in Indy and hit the market. And just it was time for a change. I think there was a lot of things going on within the organization where they were trying to just kind of start over fresh anyway. Mm-hmm. And so what was your free agent experience like? What stuck out with Minneapolis? And how, you know, what'd you learn in that process?
Yeah, it's almost like, it's funny because things like come full circle almost. And it was basically like recruiting all over, kind of like college again, but at the pro level. Because I was an unrestricted free agent a couple of years previously, but I ended up just re-signing with Indiana. I felt like at that point I was invested and I felt like I owed them something for taking like a chance on me when I had torn my ACL and they still drafted me. But come to when I was actually an unrestricted free agent, I just dove in and I was just interested to seeing like what the process is like, just like similar to when I was doing my NCAA stuff. I was like wide open, eyes wide open, and just excited to enjoy the process. And that led me to signing with Minnesota. And I mean, if you know anything about the legacy and the history and the success of Minnesota, I was really just excited to be a part of that culture and to have the opportunity to play in Minnesota facilities alone. I mean, if you do a lot of, I have a little Instagram reel where I saw the show of facilities and how they really have state of the art taking care. Sorry. Hello. Come on, man.
Dogs.
Sorry. This Shout is one of my dogs. Other my other children. For all the dogs. But yeah, so I was really just dove into free agency and was really just excited to try something new. And here we are again. I will be a free agent come again. This January is when free agency opens again. So it'll be interesting to see what the experience is like again. And it's funny to also think that like where you are as a person, as an athlete, like your mentality, like all of those things change. And so like free agency this time is not the same as it was last time. Same as when I was an unrestricted free agent. So kind of where you are, your priorities and all those things go into the whole experience of a free agency. So it's going to be completely different this time than it was the last two.
Yeah, no, that was actually super dope getting to watch you play with some legendary players in Mini, and you guys had a solid team, and so yeah, I'll be looking forward to what's next for you, and obviously I'm rooting for you no matter where you go, but I got some spots in my mind that I'm like, ooh, now would be a good fit here.
Potential. Shoot, it was great. I mean, one of the reasons why I went there too was the opportunity to play with Sylvia Fowles before she retired, and one of the greatest to play the game, one of the greatest centers of all time. And so I was able to do that. And once again, like, I came into the league playing with Tamika Catchings, and then now here in free agency, I got to go play with Sylvia Fowles. So I have been very fortunate to play with some great athletes in my time in the WNBA. And it's funny because Syl gave me a lot that rookie year, but one of my welcome to the league moments. So funny to finally come around and to be her teammate.
Yeah, no, that's, I feel like she gave a lot of rookies their welcome to the WNBA moment.
Rookies, she gave a lot of vets reminder moments of her in the league.
I think that was Steph's welcome to the W moment. I asked her on her episode and she was like, yeah, it was the first time that Syl put her shoulder in my chest and was like, yeah, it's like that here. Mm-hmm. You better get ready.
Welcome to the big girl league.
Yeah. So I do want to jump back to overseas because I think this is a huge, like, misunderstood topic from basketball fans. Obviously, the WNBA season is a shorter season. And then it happens basically opposite of some of the other seasons. So a lot of women are going through a WNBA season, taking 2 weeks off, 3 weeks off, sometimes less, and then going and playing a complete other season overseas in like a women's EuroLeague or any type of environment like that. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned just injury risk reduction earlier. Obviously, financials play into it, but is that kind of like the standard for pretty much every WNBA player? Like the expectation is like, yeah, I'm going to go play this season, then I'm going to go overseas, and that's just what I have to do. It's like, it's just what we do. Is that kind of how it is?
So when I first started, that was definitely how it is. The landscape has changed a bit. Now you're seeing a little bit more investment in women's basketball and women's sports in general. And that comes from an individual sponsorship marketing opportunity and coaching, like we talked about with the NCAA. So there's definitely some avenues to not go overseas to make some money still. But there's no money like overseas. So when I was first starting the league, I played in Italy, France, Italy again, China, Korea twice. So I've played in a couple different markets, a couple different countries, and that was just the thing to do. So you'd finish your career, you'd sign to go play somewhere overseas, and it was a great way to stay in shape for W season, but also to make money. I was making 3 to 6 times my contract in the WNBA overseas. So, the money talks. Money talks.
You have
for sure.
To. Yeah, you have to do that.
Yeah, but as I've kind of gotten older, there's been, I don't know, with age comes wisdom is what they say, right? And also comes old knees and old body parts and realizing that I can't play 11 out of the 12 months
year-round.
Yes. And earlier in my career, I was playing on 3 teams, right? So I was playing on a WNBA team, I was playing on a pro team, and then I played with Team Canada too. So depending on the year, if it's an Olympic year or if it's a World Cup year or America, like there's always something. So I was playing on some solid 3 teams a year. And it's tough on the body for sure. It's just like kind of something that we had to do in order to supplement our income or lack of income that we were getting from the WNBA. But the cool part about it is the evolution of the game and the off-court stuff that is available now, not only from like an individual standpoint of signing your own contracts, but there are opportunities through the league and through the WNBA now with like team marketing agreements where you can sign and do stuff in market with your individual team. But then the WNBA as a whole has some league marketing agreements that they're signing with select athletes. But that investment is huge, not only from our league investing in our athletes, but from big brands too. You have the opportunity to get in cheap right now. Like you can see the projection, you can see how the expansion of our game, and not just from teams, but the expansion of our game in terms of marketing opportunities, in terms of TV rights deals that are coming up here. And you can really get in as a sponsor really cheap right now and throw some money at the game. It's going to go a long way.
I was going to say, it's like investing heavily in the WNBA right now, or just women's basketball in general, is like, it's kind of like, you know, if you were to throw money into Amazon or Google in like the early 90s.
Yeah.
It's like, obviously, you don't know at the time what it's going to be, but if you just look at the trends, you're like, okay, this is an investment that's going to grow, and it's going to not even like in financial terms, like, get your money back. I mean, you'll make a lot of money in this game, obviously, but just the evolution of the game and just the overall growth is going to be huge for all parties involved. So, yeah, I think, like you said, it's an easy decision. Get in cheap right now and watch it grow, and it's going to explode. I mean, I'm super excited to watch kind of like where it is in the next 25 or so years, and just think back, like, damn, like, do you remember there was only 144 roster spots? Now we've got
that bubble documentary and be like, oh, there's only 144. But
yeah,
I mean, it's smart business, but also it's like, I mean, it's smart business, but it's good business. Like, to know what the WNBA represents, the athletes that they represent, and to know that like you're investing in people that are so much bigger than just athletes. Like, if you look at the whole of the WNBA, like, we have some super dope people, like business owners, like, and a majority college graduates, just because of the year that, or the rules to get into the WNBA. But I mean, TV analysts, like, now coaching, adding into that, we have people that own restaurants. Rebecca Brunson had her own food truck. Like, she's not a player anymore, she's a coach, but yeah. And so Deborah Peters, my best friend, shout out to her. A former WNBA player, but now like is into development and businesses. Like, you have some of the smartest people in the league and some of the most like caring people, the most invested in our society as a whole. I mean, you can see the work that we did in the bubble with flipping the Senate seat and Reverend Warnock. And it's smart and it's easy business, and the money will come.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, I'm a fan of the W, but I knew I was like a true fan, like a real ride or die fan last Sunday when I got asked to go to the Colts game and it was a 1 o'clock game. I said, no, finals. No, they started at three.
It's game one.
I got like, you think I'm going to miss this matchup on this day? Yeah. No, I'm not going to the Colts game. I'm cool. That was like a cool moment for me. I'm like, oh, I'm really invested. Like, I love this.
Just takes a little bit, but like, that's how, I mean, we go back, like, you train Ty, like, I'm sure like us being in your ear and you being around us is definitely helpful, but like
100%, the way
you
get
is, like, you need accessibility and you need availability, and like, you need to put us on TV on ABC so people can, even the casual fan can flip and find the game. But like, you gotta expand in the access. So we talk about expansion in teams, but like, you gotta expand in other ways too. Expand the access to the game, expand merch, like, so people can rock the gear. Like, I know we talk about that little t-shirt collab that I did, and like, all my friends are still bringing up like, oh, are you gonna do more t-shirts? And I'm like, yo, it's like little things like that, like, that can get people to buy in, but you need to expand those avenues too, not just dollars, not just teams, but you gotta expand in the accessibility to the league and to the players. I know we're jumping.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, also, it's like basketball. Basketball is basketball. Like, I love the game of basketball. And if I'm flipping through the channels and I see a basketball game, I'm probably going to watch it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter who's playing. It could be men, women, high school. It could be anybody. I love basketball. So I think the more people see it, see the brand of basketball that the W plays, the better, because it is high quality basketball. It's so high quality that there's like literally people begging for an expansion because mm-hmm. there's really good players not in. So yeah, I love that. I love all that. And I did want to talk about some of the, just like more on the overseas thing, because it's just such an interesting topic, right? Mm-hmm. Rarely do you hear about some of the things that Americans or imports will say, because we got Canadian in the house, but we'll say imports. Yeah. Imports have to go through some wild stuff. Like when you're going overseas, you're leaving your home, you're mm-hmm. leaving a country that's comfortable to you and everything you know, and you're going to play in a foreign environment. And when you get there, there's a lot of expectations on you as a player, and there's a lot of pressure on you as a player. But then there's also this unknown of what's going to happen while you're over there, mm-hmm. because it's not America. You're not hip to the news over there. You don't know what's going on politically in that country in most mm-hmm. cases. So as a player, I guess, does that affect you in any way when you're choosing places to go, or when you're choosing contracts to select? Like, are you looking at that? I know you're big picture. So are you looking at that? Like, what's going on in these countries outside of the 2 hours a day that I'm playing basketball? Am I going to be safe?
Yeah. I mean, I know I mentioned this when we talked about free agency, but like where you are in your life kind of dictates and changes the lens that you see this in. Because I remember early in my career when my previous agent, like they would bring me contracts and like I would look at them and like, okay, what's the dollar say? Who's got the bigger dollar amount? Like, and that's yeah. really where I was at. Like I was fresh out of college, right? I needed to make some money. So now, I mean, I don't even know today, as in right now, if there's a dollar amount that could get me to go overseas. So like I said, like things change in the lens you're viewing in these situations in, but it takes a different breed to play overseas and to play continual overseas. I'm not saying go 1 year and thug it out and be okay. It takes a different breed because it demands a lot out of you. Not only the being homesick and the time that you miss with your family and friends, but like you said, like you're at the mercy of your new environment, new culture, food. If you're a picky eater, is like huge. Like think about it, we live mm-hmm. like we are our job. Like we live our job. So like there's like something as simple as like the cuisine is not appetizing to you, or it doesn't fit your, if you're vegan or whatever, like that could be the hardest part.
Right.
Then you get into like language, and I've played in places where I needed a translator. So I'm yelling down the court, running down the court, trying to figure out what my coach is screaming at me, and my little translator's next to him like, hey, do this. And like,
yeah.
There's so much that goes into it, and like just adding like how much of a mental and emotional load that can be on, and then still have to go perform at your best because your livelihood relies on you to compete at the highest level and compete the best that you can. I mean, and everyone has their crazy stories on being overseas. And like, I mean, some moments of like, I've heard stories of people getting the paid out the trunk in cash. So like, you know, it depends on the country and a lot of those things should, if I leave and say, I say all this in jest, but because there are some real situations. I mean, we saw that what happened with Brittany Griner in being in Russia. You see now there's athletes that are trying to come home from Israel today. I know local indie athlete Bria Gross, she's on her way home from Israel today. So mm-hmm. like there's some real, real things that go on in playing in different countries. And so I say that in just to take it lightly, but if I leave with anything and any advice is like all that stuff matters. Like we talked about making that decision going to college, all of this matters. Like all of that stuff is like training for other moments, right? Like making a decision and one that you're going to be comfortable with is seeing the big picture. And so mm-hmm. yeah, early on I was maybe chasing the bag a little bit, but today, the Natalie today that has evolved, all of that matters. Quality of life matters. And for me, I couldn't put a dollar amount on it. but to each is their own, and but I think it's important to look at all that, because it's not you got traded to a team a state over her down the street. You're in a different country.
Yeah,
there's no going home to mom if it doesn't work out. Like it's real. It's real life, and it can be scary.
Yeah, and it's very cutthroat too. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's a lot of unknown, a lot of uncertainty, mm-hmm. and just a lot of factors that go into it. So, like you mm-hmm. said, when you start introducing family, children, things mm-hmm. like that, it has to be such a situation that makes sense. And then, and sometimes even then, it ain't gonna make sense. Like no. like you said, it's yeah. it, for all the teams listening out there. She doesn't want to go. Stop calling her.
Now, if you got a sitter in the bag, right, and I can have a, you know, my mom can come, like, maybe.
Right. We need two built-in babysitters. We need child care. Might as well get a homeschool system set up. Like,
Mav need that first class ticket by himself next to me.
Yeah, facts.
I mean, there's a lot of things, like, where, like I said, my lens now, there's a lot that will go into those things. But, yeah. I mean, shoot. And it's not even just that. It's not even getting there. It's like, you have to compete when you're there too. Like,
right.
There's been situations where your check is late because you haven't won a game in a while. So it's not here. There's not these laws to protect to make sure your check clear and your check come on time either. So,
facts.
It's a very different world when you get into the overseas life.
Yeah. All right. I want to dive into some of your I'm going to mess up the acronym. WNBPA. There we go. We got it. You know, I'm not the smartest guy, but I can put four letters together every now and then. But I want to talk about some of your role in the organization, what you guys are focusing on. I know that you are in the leadership role as a treasurer there. So just talk about kind of what goes into that and some of the big focuses that you guys are really working towards, if we haven't already talked about some of them.
Yeah, we've touched on a couple of them, but even when I was with Indiana and then with Minnesota, before I really joined the executive committee with the Players Association, I was a player rep for my team with Indiana, because it's always been big for me to be able to, like, give back to the game, and to be able mm-hmm. to, like, represent my fellow colleagues has been huge for me, and a role that I don't take lightly. And we're coming up here and probably some CBA negotiations again, and just to see where our league has gone and the steps that we have taken with this last CBA have been huge. But when you when you create change, there's always, like, a step back on, like, okay, what can we do better this time? And I think one of the big focuses, like we already touched on, is, like, the quality of life of players, the quality of travel, the salaries. Like, we talk about those big ticket items that really matter. And another one that I can speak, like, personally as Natalie Chanwa, maybe not in my role, but we talk about mothers and the strides we took at the last CBA in the growth that we had there, in terms of salaries being paid 100% when on maternity leave versus 50% as it was previously, having an extra bedroom in our apartments, like the little things like that have been huge. But now, as a mother and going through this, I can always take that one step further now, having the personal experience on, like, what can we do more? Or what can we fine tune a little bit more? What can we instill to make sure that mothers' experiences, for regardless what team they play on, are the same and are treated the same? And so, me going through that personal experience, now that's what I'm going to bring back to the table to talk to with my other colleagues that. And be like, hey, I went through this. So, like, I can see that the stipends for childcare are important. The things that we're taking care of mothers is huge. But then in my role actually as a treasurer, it's, like I said, the big ticket items and how we can continue to challenge our league to want to expand in other avenues than just adding teams and roster spots. Like, expand in, we have a TV deal coming up, expand in how can we get our games on more TVs? How can we get merch in more homes? How can we get more opportunities to inspire these younger girls that are dropping out of sports too early? So maybe diving into the word of expansion more than just adding teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I would love to to learn more about that. Obviously we can do it off the podcast, but I'm intrigued by all that stuff. Yeah. Because you would think, you know, it's like the WNBA, they should have probably the best maternity leave, like, in the world. Like, we're talking about elite athletes, elite humans having babies and then coming back and playing basketball. That's wild. Like,
but it's crazy. Even with our last CBA, when we did all this, like, how, like, revolutionary it was in, like, women's sports, like, is still mind-blowing to me that, like,
yeah.
That we're just getting to this point where we're like, right. Oh yeah, hey, we have women that have babies and we also have people that are having babies, but also being athletes, like, oh yeah, they go together. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this is just a thing. And so I think it was great to, like, also know, like, me personally going through that experience and also knowing that, like, I don't have to pick, like, between my career of being an athlete and being a mother, that I can do both. And I think that was huge for me in having that kind of reassurance and in my experience going through this and now coming back to being a basketball player and knowing that I didn't have to choose and really grateful to our Players Association and the work that they do to make that a reality.
Yeah, that's what's up. Much respect to you. I watched Catherine do it twice and yeah. Not go back to playing pro basketball. And I'm like, yo, you are a superstar. Cause I would have been toast. Like I don't have it in me. So much respect to you and all the other players who have done that. I want to put you on the hot seat. So we got 10 questions, random, rapid fire, just whatever you want. You can go in on them. Hopefully I'll get you tripped up on a couple of them. All right, first one. Who is the funniest teammate you've ever had?
Ooh. Ariel Breaker. I play with her at Notre Dame, and oh gosh, I don't even know if she's not maybe funny on purpose. So,
those are the funniest
Ariel, people. I love you. Don't take this wrong, but she might be one of the funniest players that I play with. And the second one got to be Rachel Banham, who I play with in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. She's different. She's funny. And like, I'm just thinking, in the back of my head, I was just thinking about her trying to pick Halloween costumes right now. And literally she put up a poll, was like, what is the ugliest, funniest thing I could be for Halloween? And I'm like, yo, why do you even think that? Like, why are you like this? She's definitely a mood lightener. So, and it's funny. Love they're that. Both like in Minnesota now and work for University of Minnesota. So
love that. All right, what is your go-to hot sauce brand?
Ooh, Louisiana.
Louisiana, okay. A little 79 cents a bottle.
I was going to say, like, not to say that like I'm like loyal to them or anything. It's just cheapest one. Cheapest. It's a good size. Like, Tabasco's too small for me. Like, I need.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Start one, bench one, cut one.
Oh, no.
Your favorite restaurant in Indy. Your favorite restaurant in Mini. And your favorite restaurant back home.
Tough.
So you gotta break down who's the favorites where, and then you gotta start, bench, and cut one.
This is so tough because you know me, I love food.
Love food. Like,
I'm only eating at Quality, let's be real. So to have to like bench one is tough.
Yeah.
Okay. Start one is going to have to be my Canadian restaurant, which is Pie. It's like a Thai place downtown Toronto. Fire. Authentic Thai food, not like Thai American, what you guys eat here. Authentic Thai. They're from Thailand. They make the best things. Quality Love ingredients. That. Fire. That's my start. My bench has to be my indie restaurant. I mean, you know, I like a little juicy seafood. And yes. I know it's not like, you're in Indiana. Why are you eating seafood in Indiana? It's good, okay?
It's not about that. You just got to go and experience it.
Yes, in the bag and all the...
Yeah.
It's good, okay?
Fire.
And also, like, get the black mussels, the snow crab, juicy seasoning, medium. They'll get you
right. All that.
Okay. All that. My cut then has to be... That leaves Minnesota. So, like, part of me is like, well, don't pick the best restaurant because you're cutting them. I'm going to, like, cut... Hen House. It's a breakfast spot. I like it. Sometimes I got mimosas if I'm not eating pregame meal there. So
right,
they're good.
Hen House. I like that. That's a good name for a restaurant. All right, this one's very simple and makes sense. What's your pregame playlist looking like? Who's on there? What artists? What type of vibe are you going for?
I can only speak to vibe because I'm like R&B 90s. Mm-hmm. I'm like the maybe don't put me on the aux if you're trying to get hype. I'm a very like slow-mo, like you might get some Lauryn Hill on there. Like once in a while there's a little Usher. Like I like a good sing-along. Like there's some Drizzy on there. You get a little Drake vibe in there, but I'm a very like summer Walker, like SZA, like we're yeah. mellow. If I get I like too that. Hype, like I can't even do like energy drinks. Like now I can with the baby, but like I couldn't do energy drinks before because like I couldn't get too hype. I need to like chill and like chill. Mellow out before games.
I like that. I've been listening to a lot of SZA lately. She's
she's like top five right now on my Spotify.
If you weren't a pro hooper,
what would you be doing for a living right now?
If I was not a pro hooper, I probably still be in athletics somewhere. Whether that's like maybe on the business side, like sports admin, Dobo, kind of that stuff. Cause mm-hmm. I think I'd still be in like sport avenue. Maybe like left field a little bit. Like I like food. So maybe I would have like went chef and owning restaurant, like that business side of it. Cause I like food. And then like dream, like I would be like a Instagram paid, like traveler, like you know when they get like paid to go, like, test hotels and all that stuff. Yeah, mm-hmm. That would be like vibes.
Yeah, this just came to me. It's not on the list, but it's not on your list. Say you did own a restaurant. Like let's say okay. you owned a restaurant, what would you call it?
I don't have a name. I don't have a name in there, but I had a concept for years. Like this okay. is like down the road. Like I had money to play with vibes. This is my okay. network because I like you take the concept of like. So, you know, when you go to a food court, like we're not talking quality of food here. We're talking about concept. Yeah. So the food court, yep. like you go, you got the little like Asian spot, you got the little like Chick-fil-A vibe or whatever that is, or yep. chicken place. Cause then come on, pay me. But, yeah. you got like smoothie place, like you got all the different, restaurants. So, or restaurants, fast food places. I would take that concept and kind of like throw it into a restaurant, except with like quality food. So we'd have like rotating menus, but like real chefs from those different places. Like I talked about my favorite restaurant, Pie, being in Thailand, like they're actually from Thailand, like having rotational, different like continent chefs come in, like, I don't know, maybe rotating on the month or something like that, but we'd have different ones come in and change the cuisine like regularly.
That'd be dope. That'd be fire.
Might not be actual like business concept makes sense, but this is like yeah. play money if I had money.
To yeah, live. I was going to say that sounds expensive as hell, but we're going to just imagine the greatness.
Yes, because I want like Michelin, like star, like level, like
absolutely. do you have a hidden talent?
Do I have a
hidden talent? All right, that's easy enough. Nope. Easy enough.
I was like, him. I'm thinking, I'm like, no, definitely don't.
it's a personal question, but it's like, it's kind of a goofy question. Sometimes Catherine and I talk about this. It's like, what other names were you considering for Mav? Like, what were some of the names that got chopped?
I have a whole list. And honestly, they got chopped like almost instantly. So like it was the only name that me and his dad could agree on was Maverick. So the other names kind of like got vetoed. And then I think the longest process was like the middle name. His middle name's Noel and it's after my dad. It was my dad's nickname growing up. So that was like probably the longest process was figuring out the middle name because we could only agree on Maverick. So
yeah, I feel that. I need an unpopular opinion about basketball.
Unpopular opinion about basketball?
Mm-hmm.
Dunking's overrated.
Oh, that's yeah. that might be the Instagram reel. Dunking's overrated. Right there.
2 points is 2 points. That's
content. I like that.
I understand that it's like, well, sports are supposed to be entertainment too, but I mean, 2 points is 2 points. I could lay the ball in or you could do all this and then still hit it. So
mm-hmm. 2 points is 2 points. That's a fact. And it's also like, it's kind of becoming so common now that it's not that exciting. When like yes, you got to see a stupid, up, like a crazy dunk yes, to get me yeah. hype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's why when people are like, oh, our women's game is not exciting because they can't dunk. And I'm like, in reality, how much are the guys in the NBA doing that spectacular level of a dunk nowadays in game that it's really right. like, ooh, I remember this was the greatest game because they did this dunk.
Facts. Yeah. Which also, that's a terrible excuse to not watch women's basketball.
Yeah, don't even get me started.
All right. Who is on your Mount Rushmore of women's basketball players?
Ooh, this is tough. How many? It's an American thing. How many faces are there on Rushmore again?
It's four. It's four. But I asked this to everybody, and somehow we always end up with five or six. So if you spill over a little bit, it's all good.
Okay. Well, I'm also gonna say like I think association matters to me. Like people that I really know, because like I want to put like players like Tamika, like that I've played with, like goats that I've played with or that I really like know yeah. kind of is huge, because I mean you can always put like the OGs, like you can put like a Tina Thompson on there, Cheryl Swoops on there. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like Tamika Catchings, Sylvia Fowles. I'm gonna put a young one. I think Asia's gonna be on the Mount Rushmore. I'll throw a little in there.
I think she could go down as like the greatest of all time.
Yeah, like between her and Stewie, something different. Yeah. Between the two of them, they didn't even grow up anywhere close together. I was gonna say what's in the water, but listen, the two of them, they could be my young two that are gonna be on a future yeah. Mount Rushmore, because what they're doing is crazy in the game right now.
No, that's a fact. All right, last one. What's the wildest purchase you've ever made? What's just like a dumb, I got a bag and I'm about to blow it. What's that purchase?
Well, you know what is funny? I'm a very like frugal person. I don't like do this like really. Like, I mean, like I bought my car. Like that's not wild to me because I needed a car. But yeah. I think like my motto has been like, if you get in your bag, you get a bag. So I don't be buying like crazy bags, like, because I'm still, like I said, I still frugal in a sense. Mm-hmm. But like after the Olympics, like when they got like the Gucci's in the airport, when you're in Europe and stuff like that, they got like normally they have designer stores in the airports. Like I'll buy myself a bag. So like all the bags and stuff that I have all like have a little bit of meaning to me, because like I've bought them after like major tournaments or events and stuff like that. So
like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're responsible.
I'm frugal, like responsible, but like still little flash. I told one of my young bucks that if we win a medal at the Olympics, I said that will carry on. I will buy her a bag. Go crazy. If we get in her bag.
Oh, I like that. I like that. I will say though, you said you needed a car, so you got a car, but you didn't need a car with like a 10-foot iPad screen in the front. I mean, let's talk. I'm gonna put you on blast a little bit. It ain't like you drive a Honda Civic now.
Okay, I mean, like the car that I got when I got to league, I got a Kia Optima when they first came out. So I did. But then, like as you get older, I needed a car that like wasn't on the ground, so I had to get a little Benz. And then once again evolved, I had a kid and stuff, so I need a bigger Benz. So I mean, I drive a car. It's a big SUV. I'm a big person. All the people that I drive around are big people. Oh, so man. Couldn't do no little car anymore. Okay.
I respect it. I just had to give you a little bit of, you know, had to give you a little flack. All right, so that's all I got for you today. Before I let you get out of here, tell the people where they can find you, and anything you want to promote or plug, feel free.
The WNBA playoffs, tap in, watch them, support the league. We are, like I said before, you can get in early, get in cheap, and you don't have to be a bandwagoner later. So support women's basketball and women's sports, as always. You can follow me on Instagram at natachon11. You can find me on X at natachon, NATACHON.
Man, it's still Twitter around here. Whatever. It's still Twitter.
Tweet.
We're still tweeting.
Yeah, we're still tweeting, or threads, or whatever the thing is. But yeah, tap into the game, because we got some really dope people in the sport. So, and also, shout out to you, Justin. I appreciate you putting me on platforms and giving us opportunities, as always. It's the people that you meet along the journey. It's not what you do. So you are one of them. So I appreciate you.
Hey, Mad love to you. Mad love to you always. I appreciate you jumping on here.
Okay. See ya.
And that was season 2, episode 5 with Natalie Achanwa. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. It's always great to catch up with Nat. Learned a ton, and it was just a great conversation. If you guys did enjoy it, please leave us a review, rate it on whatever platform you're listening to, share it with a friend. That helps us grow the show. And without that support, without you guys' support, this show will be nothing. So appreciate all of the listeners out there tuning in. And like I said, we'll be back with another episode next week, season 2, episode 6. Got another great guest lined up, and we'll see you guys then.